Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 260.
It was the dawn of the third age of mankind, 10 years after the Earth-Minbari War. The Babylon Project was a dream given form. Its goal, to prevent another war by creating a place where humans and aliens could work out their differences peacefully. It's a port of call. Home away from home for diplomats, hustlers, entrepreneurs, and wanderers. Humans and aliens wrapped in 2,500,000 tons of spinning metal, all alone in the night. It can be a dangerous place, but it's our last best hope for peace. This is the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2258. The name of the place is Babylon 5.
Hello, and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with Earth Station 1 Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and this week we are joined by Jared Albrick, art director for White Rocket Books, and person who, until just recently, had never watched Babylon 5. Welcome aboard the show, Jared. Glad to have you on.
Man, I'm fired up, man. I'm all like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, everybody in the... Is this not about Mambo number 5?
No, I'm afraid not. Dang. It's about Babylon 5. Babylon 5.
I can catch up on that. No problem. Let's just go. I told you I'd have a joke for this for every one of these we do.
Well, I'm looking forward to them all.
All right, so that was my Mambo number 5, Babylon 5 joke. I'll work on it. Anyway, so what's up today, Van?
This is the start of something I've been looking forward to. I haven't watched Babylon 5 all the way through in quite a while, about 15, 16 years. I watched it when it first aired on P10, which was syndication. It would come on like 3 o'clock in the morning in Atlanta or stuff. And then I watched it again on videotapes I had recorded, because I recorded almost the entire series. And I watched it, and I think it was when I had the flu one week, and I watched it the whole week. I do a lot of very interesting things when I have the flu. It's my chance to get things done. And then I watched it again when I believe either TNT or the Sci-Fi Channel, or maybe both, when they aired it. Probably TNT when they aired it. Yeah, I think. And then haven't seen it since then. So I just didn't want to watch it again anytime soon, because it's such a complex, long story, so involved that it's my single favorite story ever, right? My single favorite thing in the universe. I mean, the Roger Zelazny's Amber stuff is always in kind of a dead heat with it, but at least in terms of movies, video, anything like that, it's easily my number one favorite science fiction type thing ever. And so I wanted to wait until I'd forgotten enough of the details. I mean, I'm never going to forget the actual story, but I wanted to wait until I'd forgotten enough of the details that I could watch it again and really enjoy, you know, seeing some things I'd forgotten again, all new. That's made even more entertaining now by watching it alongside you, Jared, because you're watching it while I'm watching it, more or less. We're kind of watching them three or four episodes at a time, and we're gonna pause every three or four episodes and discuss our thoughts so far. And hopefully the listeners out there will enjoy hearing both somebody that's coming back to it for the first time in years but loves it, and then somebody who's never experienced it before, and get your kind of first impressions. So what are you thinking? What are you looking forward to as far as this project goes?
Well, since I just now figured out it's Babylon 5 and not Mambo number 5, I got some catching up to do. But I tell you, I guess what I'm most looking forward to is just experiencing this universe that I've, you know, I've been in geek culture. Some would say I'm the vice president of geek culture for many years now, and it's just one of the blind spots I've had. Never seen it. I've known plenty of people who like it, who talk it up. I've read a lot of J. Michael Straczynski's comic books. I know he's a fantastic storyteller, so there's a lot of draw from that angle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge fan of Star Trek's Deep Space Nine, which I did not know until you told me recently that they were highly comparable. And then I watched the episodes and I went, oh, yes, they are very highly comparable. So it's a wheelhouse that I like. I'm not going to come at it. I think a lot of fans come at it as a Deep Space Nine versus Babylon 5. I'm not going to do that. I want to enjoy both for both. I will probably make comparisons and maybe sometimes say I like this version better, but I'm not out to torpedo either version or pick my favorite or anything like that.
Yeah, that is kind of a sore spot with many Babylon 5 fans. The shows came on within a few months of each other, and there's, depending on who you talk to, there's all sorts of nefarious scheming behind the scenes at Paramount or Warner or whatever that involved in that. So I totally am down with you drawing, you know, comparisons and evaluations in that way. But I hope that otherwise we can avoid making it the Babylon 5 versus Deep Space Nine show, because,
right,
you know, I really want to focus on Babylon 5 and its qualities in and of itself. But yeah, I mean, if there's things, because I've never really watched Deep Space Nine, and so I know I've watched enough of it to have the idea of the characters and the story and everything. But it's kind of a different thing, really. It's the superficialities are very similar, and the origins are very similar, but what they're trying to accomplish is really two different things.
Right. Yeah, and I can already sort of get that vibe, and like I said, I'm going to experience it for what it is. I won't be able to help but compare and contrast, since I'm really into Deep Space Nine, especially like right now. I'm also in the middle of my Deep Space Nine quest on Netflix. So I'm watching them both. It's probably like the worst possible idea. I'm probably gonna get all confused. Have no idea what's going on in any show.
Now some of your questions that you've texted to me make a little more sense.
Yeah, you probably thought I'm just a complete moron, which, you know, we won't rule out, but I'm just like, I'm in the middle of watching both shows at once. That's probably probably a really bad idea, but
it should be.
Yeah, no, I've enjoyed the intro. I'm sure we'll talk about it more. That's the whole point of the show. But I've enjoyed my first few episodes enough to where you know, I was like, yeah, let's do a podcast instead of no, Van, you're on your own.
Well, considering that you watched The Gathering, and we're going to talk about that, it's miraculous that you do feel that way. I've got a lot to say about that. I'm sure you do, too. But first, there's one other thing we need to point out, which is that you're watching Babylon 5 for the first time as I watch it, but I'm going to be watching Quantum Leap for the very first time while along with you. And so we're going to also we're going to kind of alternate episodes where you're the newbie to Babylon 5 with episodes where I'm the newbie to Quantum Leap, because I've never really watched more than one or two episodes of Quantum Leap. And so I'm watching it now, and I'm enjoying it. And so we'll be able to kind of go back and forth episode to episode. And by the way, these will be scattered out throughout the White Rocket regular episodes. We'll continue to do all the other normal things we've always done. These will just be occasional episodes of either Babylon 5 or Quantum Leap that we'll kind of insert into the flow.
Sprinklings, if you will. Sprinklings, yes. of this and that.
Yes.
But yeah, I thought that was a neat, you know, for our listeners. Van and I talked outside, and he kind of came to me very charged up about Babylon 5, and I said, oh, I'm about to restart my Quantum Leap journey and convince him to go on that. And I think that's just neat. Mm-hmm. Just because we're talking two really highly regarded classic sci-fi shows, but their sci-fi is so different.
So different, know? Right. They almost couldn't be more different, right, yeah.
So anyway, I think that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, let's dig a little bit into the pilot episode, The Gathering. Now, right up front, I've got to say, there's two important things I've got to say up front to the listeners. One is, when I say negative stuff about The Gathering, it's still Babylon 5 and I still love it, okay? So listeners, don't be offended, don't get all bent out of shape if you just love The Gathering and how dare I criticize it. But let's be honest, I mean, it is about the weakest point in the entire Babylon 5 chain from start to finish. It's hard to find anything weaker in a lot of ways than The Gathering. And it says a lot about it that it brought people back the next year for Midnight on the Firing Line. So the other thing needs to be said, and I don't know if Jared knows this, is that there was the original The Gathering that aired in, I want to say, January or February of 1993. You know, they went a whole year after that before they produced the first episodes of the first season. But they produced the pilot, and it had Stuart Copeland doing the soundtrack. And it was a very busy soundtrack. A lot of rhythms and drums, obviously. Stuart Copeland, the drummer of the Police. A lot of techno electronic music on top. There were also a lot of scenes in it that were made fun of by people at the time, and that Straczynski himself said he sort of disavowed and wished they hadn't been included and things like that. So later on, when TNT picked up the show for the fifth season, and that's one of the many reasons why the fifth season is kind of a different thing from the others, you'll see. When TNT picked up the show, one of the things that they did was let JMS go back and redo the pilot to create the TNT edition, which takes out some of the cheesier... Now, Jared's going, they took out the cheesiest stuff? Yes, they did.
I was
did.
Just about to ask which version I saw. Unclear from this description.
I understand that. You saw the TNT version because that's what I have. I have the old version around here somewhere, but I don't know where it is anymore.
Oh, now I have to see it.
Oh, God. Well, at some point I'll try to find it, or you'll probably find it at a yard sale before that, but on a DVD. But seriously, TNT, JMS and TNT went in, they cleaned it up. They redubbed some of the audio. They did quite a few things to it to try to improve it, and they rescored it with Christopher Franke's music, who goes on to be the person who does the music for the entire series. And Babylon 5 fans, we all adore Christopher Franke's music and score for the entire series. So you've now heard the slightly better and seen the slightly better version of The Gathering.
Oh, good.
Yes. That being said, that the audience needs to know, I seriously considered not even telling Jared that The Gathering existed, because, you know, the old story is, when you want to get somebody to watch Babylon 5 that's never seen it before, some people say skip the old Gathering, go to the TNT Gathering. Some people say just skip The Gathering entirely and start with episode 1. And some people say skip season 1 entirely and start with the beginning of season 2. But Jared, tell the folks why we went the way we did, because I think it's kind of funny.
I'm trying to remember why we went the way it did, and I suspect it has to do with my OCD.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. Yeah. I was trying to remember the conversation, and I thought if it has to do with anything, it has to do with my OCD, because you kind of tossed that up to me. Mm-hmm. You were like, you were obviously very hesitant about the pilot, and you were like, it's not really great, and I don't want to scare you off, and I want to have fun with this podcast, but... I don't know, and I told you, I said, yeah, frankly, with my OCD, I can't start a series in the middle. I can't start a series without seeing a pilot. I don't know what would happen. Blood come out of my ears. I don't know, but I just can't stand it. Like, I'm still a season behind on Arrow, and the only reason I'm a season behind on Arrow is because when it first started its premiere, my wife watched it, and I was out of town, and I missed it. And I was like, well, I'm waiting for it on Netflix then, because I'm not starting on episode 2. So I guess I have serious problems.
So I get it, but it worked out because you kept going. But do you understand why I was afraid that you might say, oh, forget this, I'm not going to go?
Yes, obviously I get it now. And I want to be clear with the listeners too, as you were clear up front about how you said, you know, hey, I may say some bad things about it, but doesn't mean I don't love it, you know. And I think I had that same caveat when we talked about Moonraker on our James Bond.
Exactly, show. Yeah.
But yeah, I want to be very clear with the listeners too that there's no setup behind the scenes here with me and Van. I'm just going to be as honest as I possibly can. I generally run as a positive guy. I can usually see the good in almost anything. I'm kind of proud of that, but I also will be honest when it needs to be. So I just want to be clear about that too.
Very good, very good. So let's get into The Gathering, and I think here's the way I'd like to do it. First, I'm going to ask you, not just yet, but first I'm going to ask you to kind of give your overall impression of what you kind of took from it. Like, what did you get is happening in it? And then once you kind of go through that, I'm going to kind of go through and lay out the outline, maybe anything you missed or anything that, you know, needs to be said, or I'll avoid anything that doesn't need to be said going forward. and we can then kind of break it down a little more structurally. So when you watched The Gathering the first time, and you're like, all right, let's see what this thing's got to offer, how did it come across to you, and what did you sort of take from it?
Okay, when I watched it the first time, okay, that's a tough question. And let's just cut to the chase then. The reason why that's tough for me to answer is because we're going to talk about a lot of details and stuff, I'm certain. But what it boils down to me was they tried to cram introducing to us every facet they possibly could of this universe, and I think it was 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. And you and I have talked before, and I even shy away from like team comic books. Like, I don't read Avengers or X-Men because I'm like, maybe I'm just a simple guy. I just don't like to follow a ton of plot threads all at once. And it was like they cast such a wide plot thread net on the pilot that I was just like, I was overwhelmed. I was like, at some points I was just like, I have no idea what's going on. I don't understand. They're treating this like I'm supposed to understand some kind of relationship that I don't. Mm-hmm. And frankly, before we recorded this podcast, I've had to go back and watch it two more times.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I've watched it three times now because, wow. Well, I mean, that's not fair. Like, the first time I kind of sat down and watched it and I was a little overwhelmed. And then the second and third times is like when I do my art, I put on a show. So I'm not necessarily watching it so much as I am listening to it. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of listened to the show, half watched it while I was doing some art projects two more times, just so I could kind of get a little more out of it.
Mm, that borders on masochism.
I understand that, and I wasn't excited about it, but I was also like, I don't want to let Van down. Oh, I want to kind of at least have the vaguest idea. Because you're right, the first time through, I was like, I mean, I got the basics. I was like, okay, I get it. We got it's. And here we go. It's Deep Space Nine. It's very similar to Deep Space Nine. In that, you know, we've got this station out in space, and it's a place where I think a lot of ambassadors come to work things out. There's a few sort of dominant powers in the universe, and it's going to take me a while to remember all their names of their cultures and stuff. So, you know, there's like the lizard people, and then there's like the bonehead wrapped around people, and there's the humans, and then there's the guy who dresses like Prince, who's pretty funny with the funky hair.
I've never heard Londo compared to Prince before, so that one, he does wear the purple though. And just so you know, there is a point later in the season, I won't give any story details away, but there's a line of dialogue later in the season where Londo actually says, "But in purple, I'm stunning." So there's your purple reference for Prince.
I'm looking forward to that. But,
yes.
Oh, so yeah, I mean, I got after going through it a few times, I kind of got the gist of it. So my overall takeaway was that, and then that episode's particular story. Mm-hmm. We also had that other race representative, and as I kind of understand it, it was sort of a being made of light, almost, who travels in this big sort of hulking exoskeleton. Maybe I'm way off.
Oh, you're talking about Kosh, the Vorlon?
Sure, yes.
he sort of looks like his own personal shower curtain moving around, yes, and he's got the head, and then he's...
Yes.
Yes. Like, you are
made
not
of light. I don't,
ready.
Maybe that'll be revealed later. I don't
well, know. The reason you're saying that is because in the at least in the TNT version, I'm not sure about in the regular version, when we see the faux Sinclair greeting him as he's coming on board, the suit opens up and you see like almost like a human hand, but it's glowing, right? It's glowing with light.
Okay. Oh.
That's what you saw there, and that's what Sinclair grasped, and to shake hands with him, and that's how the poison got introduced into the ambassador.
Oh, see, okay, I kind of missed that because once again, maybe I didn't watch it close enough, and I'll try to do better. But and then here's another trap. Here's another downside. When you are cramming so much plot and getting to know so many different cultures and different characters in 90 minutes, and then you lead off with a shape-shifting who's who episode?
Yes.
Like who's who in a cast of characters that I don't even know who's who yet.
That's totally fair. That's totally fair, because you're right. I mean, I would say that the two big downfalls, I mean, obviously it suffers from the actors are just beginning to learn their roles. They don't really know who they are yet, and the effects and everything are just starting to get going. They get better over the course of the show. But I agree, particularly the first half. I think the second half of The Gathering is stronger because they focus on the plot and trying to resolve it. But the first half is just like throwing a pot of spaghetti at the wall to see if anything sticks. And you're right that using a shape-shifting device as your MacGuffin there, as your weapon on characters that have never, I mean, it's okay for me because to go back and watch it because I know who everybody is. But when you're watching it for the first time, I can remember in 1993 watching it and I was like 50% totally intrigued. Like, oh, this is so cool. It's not Star Trek, so it's a different thing, you know, and it's really cool. And I was 50%, what the crap was that, you know?
I would say that's an accurate percentage for what I had going on.
Yeah.
As I watched it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, I think there's a big storytelling lesson there. You know, don't do the shapeshifter, I can be anybody plot until we actually know who everybody is.
That's right. Let me pause for just a second and tell you a little story that you probably have never heard related to Star Trek and Babylon 5. There's so many, but I've been to Dragon Con every year for almost every year for the last almost 20 years, and I've done other conventions. So I've been around the actors, been around JMS, and I've heard lots and lots of stories. And one of the stories they tell is that right after the show started, you know, they had the little communicators that are stuck to the back of your hand. Did you notice that?
Yeah. Now that you mention it, it's coming back to me. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They have those little silver trapezoid shaped communicators that stick to the back of your hand. Okay. So here's the thing. JMS was at a convention, and this lady came up to him in the autograph line to get something signed. And she says, "I'm trying to watch your new show, but I just can't take it seriously because it violates, you know, the rules of science fiction on television." And JMS is like, "What are you talking about?" And she says, "Well, it's been firmly established that in the future, communicators will be worn as lapel pins." And JMS is just like, "Get out. Get out of my face." So that's the kind of thing that the Babylon 5 folks and JMS were running into from the very beginning, is that not only was Star Trek a competitor, but it was a competitor that people thought was the gospel. So anything Babylon 5 did different from Star Trek, the very fact that Babylon 5 existed first was heresy to Star Trek, right? It should only be Star Trek on TV to a lot of people. And then number two, anything it did differently, if it wasn't like just like Star Trek, then they disapproved of it again, you see? So that was always extremely frustrating for we Babylonians that Babylon and on about it, because we were like, look, it's a different thing. You don't have to all be Star Trek to be on television. So I thought you'd get a kick out of that.
So are you telling me that Kirk is not going to show up?
Oh, my friend. Kirk is going to show up, but it's going to be a different story with Kirk. Oh, my goodness. Huh? I'm very
good. Oh, man. So yes. Much good stuff to come.
So much. Oh, those of you that, a lot of our listeners are obviously overlapped from Auburn fandom, right? Because they listen to the Auburn show, which is 10 times as popular as this show.
The one that
we produce. And then they come over and listen to this. And so I just want to point out, I told Jared, I'm like, look, The Gathering is 2012 Auburn. Now, some of you will not understand that, but that was like our worst season in 50 years. So basically what I was telling him was, if you can get through the worst season of our team ever, then it gets, we're heading toward Cam Newton territory, all right? We're going to get to Cam Newton and Nick Marshall and Trey Mason. That's our really good players in our national championship. We're going to get there, but you got to get through the 2012 to get to the 2010.
I'm not sure what you're talking about, because the Auburn Tigers did not play football in 2012.
Yeah, exactly. And there is no Gathering. Exactly. But even though it doesn't exist, we still got to talk about it. So, all right, so that's kind of what you got from it. I guess to give you kind of the quick rundown, let me see off the top of my head if I can lay out. Yeah, and I'll give you a little background that, without giving you any spoilers, I'll give you some of the background. What happened was 10 years, all right, the Gathering happens in 2257, And the years are important. I'm not going to give a test. As I always tell my students, I never ask a question on a test where the answer is a year, but it helps to know the years to get a sense of relative to what, to context, okay? So, the gathering takes place, I believe, in 2257. So, season one starts in 2258. All right. 10 years before the gathering, Earth encountered the Minbari. And the Minbari, other than the Vorlons, I mean, this is pretty obvious just from watching The Gathering. Other than the Vorlons, who are just like unknowable and godlike, and you just don't mess with the Vorlons, they barely even, they're like Galactus, right? They don't even necessarily notice you when they're stepping on you, okay?
So now, this is the guy that I thought was made of light.
Yeah, Kosh.
He's a Vorlon. Okay, I got it. Yeah,
no, yeah, the Vorlons are in that encounter suit, and they kind of float around in that suit and say cryptic things like, "You are not ready," you know, that kind of thing. All right.
That was pretty good, by the way.
No. other than the Vorlons, the Minbari, the guy, the people like Delenn with the head, with the bones right on their head, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Minbari are like the baddest of the badass of the aliens. Okay. But they kind of keep to themselves, really. They're very introverted, but very, very powerful. 10 years ago, we did something, and I'll hold off on going into that because there's other shows and episodes and a movie about it. There's a made-for-TV movie TNT did that explains this, so we'll get to it later. It falls later in the chronology, okay?
Okay.
I don't want to get your OCD stirred up again, so no, we haven't missed something you needed. It's later, okay?
I'm just sweating over here. There's a
big argument among Babylon 5 fans where you put. I'll just go ahead and mention it. There's a show called In the Beginning, which is another movie, the length of The Gathering, and they did it after season 4, before season 5, but it's the prequel, okay? It explains the Earth-Minbari War.
I'm much more interested in watching things by release date than I am
chronologically. Story chronologically. Right, okay, good. Well, then you're fine. We'll get it four seasons from now. All right. So there was this, we did something to tick off the Minbari, and when you poke the Minbari with a sharp stick, they decide you must be erased from existence. You must be deleted from the universe. So they started this giant war coming toward Earth, just wiping us out everywhere they went. And the only race that really helped us with weapons was the Narn, Jakar, the lizard people, okay? They helped us out a little bit, but mostly for profit. As we talk, I think they talk about Midnight of the Firing Line. Okay. Or maybe in The Gathering. All right. So when the Minbari finally got to Earth and every other human planet had fallen to them, we took everything that would fly and went up into orbit and fought what's called the Battle of the Line. It was like the last line of defense. And the Minbari were about to wipe us out at the Battle of the Line. And Sinclair, the commander, was one of the pilots on the line. Okay.
That's where he had amnesia, right?
Right. In the middle of the Battle of the Line, Sinclair disappears and he has 24 hours missing from his memory. And when he came to again, the Minbari had surrendered to Earth. And nobody knows why. Except, obviously, maybe Delenn, but she's not talking. So, okay. Then, coincidentally, wink wink, when they build the Babylon stations to try to create like a UN where people can not have giant genocidal wars anymore, you know, instead they can work things out, guess who's put in command of Babylon 5? Jeffrey Sinclair. Guess who is an ambassador from the Minbari? Delenn. Interesting. Okay. So as the station is getting up and running and the new ambassador coming, the last ambassador to arrive is Kosh of the Vorlons, who are the enigmatic space gods, basically super powerful. When Kosh arrives, what we think is Sinclair goes to greet him in the docking bay or whatever, and he reaches out. Kosh says something, and fortunately, what Kosh says does not mean anything to you yet because it's a massive, massive spoiler that they put in the special edition. I couldn't believe it when I heard it. The only thing that saves it from being a giant spoiler is that you don't know any better yet. Right?
Yeah, I got nothing out of it. So
exactly.
I don't even remember
what
the line was.
You don't want to. You don't want to get anything out of it because because they put that in there. It wasn't in the original version. And when you hear it now, you're like, well, that just ruins everything. Unbelievable. So anyway, Kosh is poisoned, and they, you know, they open his suit and save him, and turns out it wasn't Sinclair. It was a Minbari using a chameleon suit, right? It's called the changeling net, okay? And you're like, why is a Minbari trying to frame the commander for murdering a Vorlon, right? What's the purpose there? And why did the Narns help? Because the little ship that delivered that guy was a Narn ship. And, of course, Jakar denies everything. So when the gathering ends and Babylon 5 is now open for business, we're left with the question, why did the Minbari suddenly surrender at the Battle of the Line about the same time Sinclair can't remember anything? Why is Sinclair the commander of Babylon 5 when he was just a pilot? And why did a Minbari try to start a war between the Vorlons and humans by murdering and trying to frame Sinclair by trying to murder Vorlon? Because clearly, if that had happened, the humans would have been toast, right? So that's kind of where we—that's kind of where we are at the end. You also find out that the Narns and the Centauri hate each other, Londo and Jakar, because the Narn used to be a nice agrarian farmer people on their planet, and the Centauri came a few hundred years ago and enslaved them, and murdered many of them and enslaved them. The Narn have driven the Centauri away. The Centauri are no longer the dominant power in this part of the galaxy. They're in decline. They're like the Austro-Hungarian Empire or something. And the Narn are now looking for bloody revenge against their former oppressors. And that's why Jakar just seems so unhinged all the time, is because he's like, it's my turn, you know.
I definitely got that impression more as the episodes went on.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. So does that backstory kind of fill in anything for you? Does it make more sense now?
Really wish you would have told me that before I watched it three times. But yes, that does help. Because amusingly enough, the biggest kind of question mark I had, and I think I talked to you about this a little bit after I was done, was my big mystery is what happened to the other Babylon stations. Three of them got destroyed and one of them just went missing.
Yeah, the whole idea I find kind of silly. It's too bad it wasn't Babylon 3, because I can't imagine they built three in a row that all got destroyed. But they had that to make it fit the number, they had to do that. But yeah, the first three get destroyed very early on in their construction. And then what happened to Babylon 4? Do you remember?
All they said was it disappeared. They just said it disappeared. Nobody knows what happened.
It disappeared right after going online. In other words, it was finished. There was a functional Babylon 4 up and running, presumably with people on it, and it just disappeared. And they're like, well, crap. Okay, let's build a fifth one. So
just like, yeah. Like, oh, well, I guess we misplaced our giant space station.
Yeah, I wonder what could have ever happened to it. Huh. So there you go. That is a mystery, yes. There are four or five major mysteries that come out of the pilot in the first couple episodes, and we have to wonder about them for a little while, okay? Let me just go ahead and tell you, answers are coming, but they lead to even bigger questions and all that, which is always
fun. All good shows do that. They string you along nicely.
Yes.
If I'm not jumping the gun, I'd be happy to tell you what I liked about the pilot.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought that especially for a pilot, for a first shot across the bow, I actually thought the aesthetics of it were pretty good. Mm-hmm. I thought the costumes were decent. And as goes with any of those shows, especially like the shows you're supposed to watch, like Star Trek, they always get better as they go every time. I mean, if you ever watched Next Generation, you saw the bridge for season one, it looks like my living room. And it gets much better as they move on. But I thought Babylon 5 started out well visually. I thought their uniforms looked good. And they were really dabbling. It seems to me, again, I wasn't experiencing it at the time, but it seems to me like they were really dabbling in CGI space effects before a lot of people were.
Yeah.
And I commented to you via text, as I do with so many things while I'm watching them live. I text you. And I commented, I said, this looks like really good, like the high-end video game graphics of like 1995, like the PlayStation 1 era or PC games. And I don't know how you took that, but I didn't mean that as a slam.
No,
like, I thought it was actually really good because it was made in 93?
Yeah, right? The pilot was made in 92, came out early 93.
Yeah, especially when you put that framework around it, I was like, I mean, they look a little dated now, but not bad dated. Like I said, it looks like if you were playing the highest-end computer game you get your hands on in, like, say, 95.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like. Well, bad at all.
Two things. One, they get better, too, as the series goes along. But also, they were done on Amiga video toaster home computers. It took, like, days format or whatever, all the video, to render all the video. They would, right. One of the reasons that they would do an effects-heavy episode and then JMS would write a sort of talky episode is they needed 2 weeks to render all the effects for the next one. So it took a long time to make those ships, yeah.
So it looked good, and there was, of the cast and crew that they threw at us, which was, I think, 40 different people, I think.
Yeah, it seems like it, yeah.
First episode, there were some folks that I thought were pretty good. And you had tipped the cards a little bit in advance and told me that some people were going to be replaced. So I played a little game with myself while I was watching it, like, who's getting replaced?
Mm-hmm.
And who's not? And I was
I bet you guessed a couple of them.
big. I was like, Big Hair Prince guy is not getting replaced. He's good.
He's
really
awesome.
Good.
Yes.
I thought Garibaldi was just charming enough to get by.
Yep.
I thought that Commander Sinclair, I thought, was a little too vanilla.
Yeah.
And since the only thing I did know or thought I knew about Babylon 5 was that Bruce Boxleitner was the star,
mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that dude's getting replaced after this. And I was wrong.
Yeah. And it's neat. Michael O'Hare, I mean, we can talk about him for a second. Hold that pause. Put a bookmark there for just a second.
Now, remind me who that is. Michael O'Hare is?
Commander Sinclair.
Okay.
Yes. He's passed away. He had a rough time. He was having psychological problems throughout the first season, as the actor was. And he was really a trooper to kind of push through and do as well as he did. But he had a really rough time. And so between the network kind of wanting somebody a little more charismatic, maybe in a way, and his own problems, they're gonna, you know, make a change coming up. But going back and watching it now, there's so much. I mean, when I watched it the first time, I didn't like Sinclair. He was like my least favorite part of the show. I'm like, he looks like he should be a game show host rather than the commander of a space station, you know. But going back and watching it now, there's so much about him to appreciate. His style is very different from Boxleitner later, and obviously everybody loves Boxleitner. But there's a lot about Michael O'Hara to embrace and appreciate. Just the dignity and the honor and everything that he brings to it in a way. It's hard for me to put into words, but I appreciate him more now than I did when I first watched it. I'll put it that way.
Okay. Like I said, he was the one I was kind of on the line with, but like I said, I didn't think he was going to make it because I was like, I thought I was smart on this. I was like, oh, Bruce Boxleitner is going to replace him. And I was wrong. But I wasn't, it wasn't one of the firm ones. I was like, oh, that one's going to get cut. I was 50-50 on him. I knew that Asian gal was going to get cut.
Laurel Takashima.
She was just terrible. And I don't like saying such negative things about that because, you know, I've never acted in a sci-fi TV show, so if I met her on the street, I'd shake her hand and say, hey, that was cool that you were in that show. I would never say you were terrible. Hopefully she doesn't listen to the White Rock. Yeah.
No, she just was very stiff. I mean, it's like, oh, Garibaldi, glad to hear from you. And it's like, oh, because she's not a bad actress. She's in stuff like the Joy Luck Club and all, and I like her. But she just was
suited. She's gorgeous.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. But she was just not suited to that part.
No, it just felt like she didn't – she just definitely wasn't involved yet. And so, I mean, like, it's a little unfair to say she's terrible. It's a pilot. Nobody really knows their characters yet. You know, I kind of liked the doctor guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was a black guy. I think I got the impression through his accent and whatever he was probably from Africa proper.
I think that was the idea, yeah.
I don't know. Are we not going to see him again? Because I don't know that we are.
No, we don't see him again. They mentioned
him.
They
kind of liked him.
They referenced him a couple of times, basically, that he's he's gone back to Earth to help the president or something, because he's the leading, now he's the leading expert on alien, you know, physiology or whatever. So he's been recalled, and they'll, you haven't met the new doctor yet, have you?
I think I did in episode two.
Oh, okay. Dr. Franklin. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's right.
I'm trying to remember, but was he like Indian? Did I make that up?
No, he's African American. He's a younger guy though than Dr. Kyle. He's Dr.
Okay.
Stephen Franklin.
I think he might have been in episode two. I might have been thinking about the wrong guy. I think he might have showed up in two. Anyway,
I think he does. Yeah.
I kind of missed that guy, but yeah. And there were just so many other characters, and I had convinced myself as I was watching the pilot that Sinclair's lady friend, the redhead, who shows up, I thought she was actually going to be the assassin. Because she was the least person you least suspect. I was
right.
That's it. And I was wrong.
Well, there's a couple others. There's Leta Alexander, the telepath, and she doesn't come back when you get to the new show. You get the new telepath. You met Talia, right? Talia.
Yeah, the new blonde.
The blonde
telepath.
Right. We trade the redhead for the blonde. Okay. And then the other thing I was going to mention is that you talk about Laurel Takashima, the lieutenant commander. What's really the only thing about losing her that kind of hurts, and this is not a spoiler because it never happens. I'm planning on doing a video feature either today or later on for the Patreon page, where I'm going to talk about what Babylon 5 would have been like without the cast changes and without the story changes, because it obviously had to be flexible right over 5 years, and we know how it played out. But there's a whole other alternate Babylon 5 where it would have played out according to the original plan from 92-93, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But if she had stayed on the show, I think she would have ended up being a double agent working for some of the bad guys. And she would have been like backstabbing people secretly, but you wouldn't have found that out for a while. So that's kind of a cool thing that we would have had with her if she'd stayed on the show. And it's too bad that we lose that, because it would have been neat having her just kind of like being one of the main heroic characters and yet secretly being a bad guy.
That is interesting.
Yeah, so that's the only thing
just,
we really lose.
Just one more layer of complexity to an already complex.
It is very complex. If I had realized how averse you were to complex stories and casts, I might have never even suggested this.
Well, I can find a niche for them, because, like I said, I truly enjoy Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing, as we move into episodes one and two of the actual series, more of your traditional Star Trek-y approach, where yes, there's a lot going on, but this episode is going to focus on just a couple of these people. You know, you get a vibe at the beginning of every Star Trek episode, whether it's Next Generation or original or Deep Space Nine. You get a vibe within the first 10 minutes of whose episode it is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
that's right.
And that's how I can get by. That's how I can make it through. And I think that's why the other two episodes we watched, the episodes one and episode two, were more enjoyable, more of the formula that I'm used to, and I can get into.
They're more
so
focused.
Much befuddling stuff going on in the pilot, by far. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said they're more focused is what I'm saying, yeah.
Yes, the just so many befuddling things in the pilot for a simple guy like me. By far the most befuddling thing is frictionless sheets.
I don't even know.
She was like coming on to him, she's like, yeah, about frictionless sheets, and I'm like, I tried frictionless sheets back in 03, and we got a busted end table lamp out of the deal. It's not a good scene, man.
Not a good way to go. No. Any last thoughts about the gathering before we take a little break here and then get into the first two episodes?
No, I think we exhausted it pretty well. Like I said, there was some ups and some downs. By far, the biggest down was its complexity, and it had a feel like Straczynski was like, I'm not sure if I'm going to get a series out of this, so I want to cram as much into it as I can. Mm-hmm. Like it was almost like a lack of confidence type of deal. Like he didn't really know what he was getting out of it, and you know the backstory behind it better than I do. That's how it felt, though. It felt like, if this is successful, then I'll get a series. Didn't feel like I already have a series.
Right. No, that's right. He had a very hard time getting it on the air. He had a very hard time getting it on the air, including a trip to Paramount about a year before Deep Space Nine came on, which is one of the conspiracy theories. Anyway, let's take a break. And when we come back, we will talk about episode 101, Midnight on the Firing Line, and 102, Soul Hunter, one of my favorites. But before we take our break, I want to thank our sponsors from our Patreon page. I've been remiss in doing this, as I promised, but we're going to do it going forward. And if you want to really help out White Rocket and help us to produce more shows, more videos, more comics, more books, everything that we produce, then go to Patreon, patreon.com/Van Allen Plexico. You can just go to patreon.com and then search for me, search for Van Plexico, Van Allen Plexico, and it'll come right up. But you can just go to straight to patreon.com/Van Allen Plexico. There you can get on exclusive videos that I'm producing every weekend. We'll do previews. We're doing some podcasts that are only going to go there, including John and I are doing John Ringer and I are doing Lord of the Rings movie by movie with trivia and stuff. Having a lot of fun with that. So you can get those for as little as like $1 a month as a member, as a sponsor, and a patron of our shows and of White Rocket. And I want to thank particularly our platinum, the Eagle Has Landed patron, Nicholas Cottrell, and also Bill Matthews, Dave Medinas, Mark Squire, Michael Kirshner, and Dave Powell. You guys all are fantastic, and you're keeping the lights on here in the White Rocket Studios, and you're letting Jared and me be that much more likely able to finish our Cole Lightning comic book and hopefully do more stuff like that, right? So thank you so much. And now let me I think we've got a little word from one of our other shows.
Hello there. This is Jared Albrick, a.k.a. the Yard Sale Artist, with a quick podcast promo for my show, Comics with Normies. Here's how the show works. Using my yard sailing skills, I acquire a random comic book from a yard sale. I then give said random comic to a normie, a normie being a person who doesn't normally read comic books. Then, on the show, I'll sit down with the normie to discuss the issue, get a real outsider's point of view, and see what some of the comics that we love, and maybe not love so much, seem like to those normal folks we see walking around on the streets each day. It should be a fun perspective and good for a few laughs. You can check out the Comics with Normies podcast, along with some other fun-filled podcasts from White Rocket Entertainment, on iTunes and at whiterocket.podbean.com. And feel free to join the show using Twitter handle @NormiesPodcast or on Facebook at Comics with Normies. Once again, you can find Comics with Normies on iTunes and at whiterocket.podbean.com. We'll see you there.
Okay, and we are back now. I am here with Jared Albrick, and we are going to talk now about the first two episodes of the series proper. The first one up, Jared, 101, is Midnight on the Firing Line, which is kind of just a standard space opera episode with some interesting political intrigue. How did you react to it after having watched The Gathering?
Okay, keeping in mind that I watched, you know, The Gathering a couple times, and then Midnight in the Firing Line a couple times, and then what's the name of the other one I watched?
Soul Hunter.
Remember, I'm not. What's
Soul,
that?
Soul Hunter.
Soul. Yes, yeah, right. Soul Hunter a couple times. I just needed a quick reminder. Okay, I remember what it was about now. They kind of blend together when you watch them. So
oh,
fast,
sure.
Like I did.
Well, you know,
this is the one. Yeah, this is the one where it starts out at Raggish something.
Raggish 3. Yes.
Right. Raggish 3. Okay, and it's like the Bari?
Nope, Centauri.
Have a agricultural colony there? Yes. How am I doing?
Centauri.
What's that?
Centauri.
The Centauri. That's right. The funky hair people.
Yes.
Damn it. Anyway, yeah. So they got an agricultural colony going there. Some mystery people show up and take it over, and that kind of leads to your political intrigue on Babylon 5. The Mondo got very very stressed out because he's personally invested because he had got his nephew placed on that colony, and yeah. There had been a lot of violence and takeover, and I believe that's where we find out that Jakar's people were the ones that took it over because it yeah. used to belong to them.
Yes,
and they were taking it back, and it was one of those things where it's like, okay, it used to belong to you 100 years ago. It's not even worth the take back now. But they're basically being kind of petty in the grand scheme of things. And they took back a colony that couldn't defend itself. And I'm getting into the weeds here. Let me step back and just say, I thought it was really good. because it did what I wanted to do. I got to know some of the actual characters and races and how they relate, mm-hmm. as opposed to not so much in the pilot. To me, the episode was really a Londo and Jakar episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it was neat how it was Londo's people, the Centauri,
yes,
who have a tradition that they can possibly foresee their own deaths.
Yes.
And he had, like, foreseen the two of them killing each other.
Yes, that's right.
And I thought that that was pretty neat.
I couldn't believe how early that was mentioned. When I went back and rewatching these, when Londo talks about that in episode 101, like season 1, episode 1, I'm like, whoa, they're already laying out this prophecy or this dream about Londo and Jakar killing each other in the very first episode of the show. That absolutely blew my mind because I thought, oh, that must be way later they talk about that. Right here in the first episode. Unbelievable.
And apparently there's more to come on that.
Well, it's just that early that they started kind of amazed me that they started that, you know.
You got to start somewhere, though. And I think doing something like that up front was very helpful to an outsider coming to it like I was, especially coming off that pilot where I'm still scratching my head about a lot of things. Now I'm like, okay, I'm very clear. Mm. These people do not like these people.
Right.
Period. And it's funny that he did it in such a way where no one is clearly at fault. I mean, in this episode, Jakar's people, which I'm sure you know what that race is called, and I haven't learned it yet.
Narn.
Jakar's people.
The Narn.
The Narn.
Those darn Narn.
The Narn are clearly, fairly clearly in the wrong for what they did. But they set it up in such a way to where the Centauri had mistreated the Narn back in the day. So it's like no one's innocent.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of real in the world of politics and international politics and stuff like that. No one's truly innocent most of the time.
Right.
So I thought that was a neat way to set that up. A lot like you said, that one was more of a politically driven episode.
Right.
Well, although I think it was that episode that left me scratching my head with another thing that was almost amusingly funny. Correct me if I'm wrong, but like, did they go to check on what happened at Ragesh? They were like, what happened over there? And like Sinclair and Garibaldi hop in a couple of fighters and they take off and they take like a boom tube or whatever they call it on the show. I'll learn eventually.
There's a jump
they
gate.
Take like,
yeah, there's
they take
a
like a boom tube and go check something out. And I had to laugh at that because I was like, okay, so like the two guys that basically run the station have to hop in the fighters to go check it. Are they the only two guys that work on the station?
Right. Yeah, that's a common thing in all military-type sci-fi, though, is the idea that the principal actors are the only characters that ever do anything. That's just like Kirk and Spock beaming
but
down.
But even then, I factored that in. Because, I mean, Kirk and Spock do everything. And they mix it up a little more on Next Generation and so on. And I factored that in a little bit, but I still thought it was such an almost like menial task for them to do. Like, it didn't even need to be put on screen. Yeah. It could have been like some guy come back and say, "All right, sir, we scouted it out just like you want us to do, and this is what we found."
Well, one thing to bear in mind is that Sinclair was a pilot, and so he gets in that
forgiveness I gave it. I think I said I think they're trying to push the fact to us, remind us that he's a pilot.
Yeah, he's going to get into one of those Star Furies any chance he gets.
Okay, and that's, you know, being a military guy and having served in the Air Force, that rings true to me, that even your more senior, you know, your lieutenant colonels, your colonels and your major, your field grade kind of guys, any chance they get to get back in the cockpit, they're going to take it.
That's right. And also, that
rings true.
And also, there's a point, I don't know if it was in one of these episodes or just maybe one episode later, so it doesn't give anything away. There's a point where Garibaldi confronts Sinclair about the fact that Sinclair keeps wanting to jump in and do everything himself. I mean, that's a plot point. That's not just a careless storytelling. They make something out of that, so there's more coming on that.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Overall, I thought it was a great episode. I thought it was more focused, more entertaining. And it drives to the heart of what I find most interesting. Like I said, I'm a character driven person. In my stories, I like character driven, which is why I tend to shy away from comics like X-Men and the Avengers, is because you have to spread out your character development so broadly that it's, I just kind of get a little tedious. I like more intense individual. And man, you talk intense individual. that dude Londo, he was on his way to kill Jakar. And that was a fantastic scene. I liked that because Garibaldi had to give him the hard line. And I loved that bit after the confrontation where he said, you know, would you have killed me? And Garibaldi was like, yeah, but I'm really glad I didn't have to.
Right, because they're kind of buddies in a way, and yet Garibaldi's doing the job.
I love just that one little line. I'd seen the pilot, now I'd seen this episode, and I've gotten that Garibaldi's sort of a likable, charming, security-minded guy. Mm-hmm. But that one line gave me volumes on him.
Yeah.
That he's not to be trifled with. He's going to toe the line, but he's got a big heart.
I like that Londo became the Centauri with the golden gun. Right, he does like Scaramanga.
I didn't count his nipples, so I can't say for sure.
I'm not sure they even have them. But isn't this where he builds the gun out of like parts of his lamp and stuff?
I think he did.
Yeah, I think he took pieces from here and there and put it all together and made a gun, yeah.
Pieced together some stuff.
Pieced together a gun, yeah.
I think I kind of almost got lost on that in that I was wrapped up. I run on shows. I run on emotions. I was just running on that. You know, they did a good job with him. I mean, he was a man on the edge.
These are the two characters I want to talk to you about now. Because this is, like you said, this is a Londo and Jakar episode. And Londo and Jakar are two of the most beloved characters on the whole series, you know, that they're on.
And I'm already feeling that. I'm tainted because I've only seen a couple episodes, but I'm already feeling like these are the guys that I'm keeping my eye on.
But if you think about The Gathering, Londo was a clown and a buffoon, and Jakar was a stock Klingon villain, right?
That's exactly the way I felt about it.
And now you're one episode in, and how do you feel about him now?
I hate to keep doing this to you, but I feel like Londo is very much like... I'm crossing stories again. the guy in Deep Space Nine, he's my favorite character. Oh, gosh, his name won't come to me. The bartender, Quark. He's like Quark.
Hmm.
He's clowny and buffoony, and you can tell he's going to be a lot of the humor from your show. Mm-hmm. But there's a side of him that is much deeper.
Yeah.
And so I get that vibe. And again, to our listeners, I'm not trying to. it's so natural because I'm watching them both at the same time, and I'm really enjoying it. So anyway, yeah, I get that feeling. And then with Jakar, again, he absolutely came off, like you said, Klingon. That's the first thing I thought when I saw him in the pilot. He's the Klingons. I got it. And now it's like that he's got an extra layer that the Klingons know. Because the Klingons just want war, and they just want to fight, and they just don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And Jakar, he's got reasons. You get to see his reasons.
Yes.
A little bit more. So it is a deeper thing. And I kept watching because he's in such heavy makeup, too. And I'm like... this guy's given a great performance. I've seen this guy before. So yeah, I looked him up, and yeah, he's been in a ton of movies, and I found him to be one of the more memorable roles. He was the one-armed man
in
the Fugitive movie.
Yes, he was.
And I've seen him actually pop up in a few roles here and there. He's a very good actor. So, yeah, they did good casting on him.
They absolutely, yeah. I met him at Dragon Con a few years ago, a couple of years before he died, and he was a really cool guy. Everybody just loved Andreas. Here's what's interesting. Our next episode that you and I are going to do, we're going to cover 103 through 106, and there's some good Jakar development in there, too. So I can't wait to get your impressions after watching those four as to what you think about Jakar now, because it's so neat to see these characters just expand and unfold, you know, from the sort of one-dimensional cartoons they start out as, and you start thinking, you know, they're setting stuff up here. These people are not what they first seem like they're going to be. So,
yeah.
Very, very interesting.
And that's the kind of stuff I thrive on. And if you're not sick of it yet, to me, it's very reminded of Quark and Odo from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Two guys that you think you've got completely figured out two episodes in, and then they gave you more, and that's what makes it great.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to take the adventure with you.
Well, our last one is Soul Hunter, and this is a very different episode because Midnight on the Firing Line was very much, like I say, it was very much a space opera, military, you know, you had a hostage situation, you got the two mid-level empires kind of warring against each other. By the way, didn't Midnight on the Firing Line have the bit where where Sinclair says something. See, I really got to stop watching so far ahead. Sinclair goes. was Kosh in it? Did Sinclair talk to Kosh and say something about which one of them should we?
Yes, there was a Kosh moment in it, but the details of it are not coming back to me right now.
I believe Sinclair says, we're trying to work out this deal between the Centauri and the Narns, blah, 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 blah. And Kosh says, they are a dying people. You should let them pass. And Sinclair says, which do you mean, the Narn or the Centauri? And what does Kosh say?
Didn't he say yes?
Yes. Just passing casual judgment on two entire races. That's what the Vorlons do. Wow. Oh, Kosh. You're a treat always in your little enigmatic
moments.
I'm
definitely intrigued to learn more about them. I mean, are they as, you know, omnipotent almost, or as forward, what's the word I'm looking for, as, I'm not even sure what the right word is. Like, do they see more than most, or is this all a ruse, you know? And you don't need to tell me. I'll find out.
But I'm rubbing my hands together and chortling as you talk.
I really suspect, like, to me it feels like one of those things where you look at someone like Londo, and you, on surface you think there's not much there, but there's a lot more. And I'm thinking with this, with the guy you do the great impression of. I almost feel like there's less to them when they're letting on.
is there more than just a shower curtain that floats around the hallways? Yeah. And the little eye that gets bigger and smaller. You notice he's got like the little iris of his one eye, and it kind of gets open and then smaller and stuff to give him a little personality. But
I will start paying closer attention to that, because to me, so far, he just kind of looks like a shell. Like you said, shower curtain that made with it with a vacuum cleaner, perhaps. I'm not sure.
That's pretty good. Yeah, exactly. I do not approve of this comparison. Oh, man. Oh, there's so much fun to come. So Soul Hunter isn't really almost space opera at all, right? With Soul Hunter, we get more of the metaphysical stuff and almost a spiritual storyline. So what did you think about Soul Hunter?
Soul Hunter, or as I like to pronounce it, Soul Hunter.
That's right.
It definitely had a different vibe. To me, it felt, like you said, a little more spiritual and a little more space action adventure-y, you know, because there was like chase and the laser gun shootouts and that kind of thing. A little more on the action side. Big takeaways from that one. Big plotline takeaways from that one was that's kind of where we learned that you're gonna have to help me out with names again. The bone bald headed lady.
Delenn. Oh, by the way, in the gathering, you couldn't even tell it was a lady necessarily. You weren't supposed to, because in the original Stuart Copeland scored version, they even changed her voice to sound androgynous. So we weren't supposed to know if Delenn was male or female. When they started with Midnight on the Firing Line, they said, screw it, just let poor, you know, Mira Furlan be a woman, Minbari. But that was really a strange thing. They made her look. The makeup was really harsh in the gathering, and they smoothed it out. Right? Doesn't she looks a lot more feminine now?
So much so that I was going to ask you: is it the same actress?
Yes. You just can't tell because they covered. I mean, that was the thing: was that Mira Furlan is like, if you're going to totally cover me up and change my voice, why do you even need me? Mm. Right? You can have anybody in there if you're going to do all that, and that's a valid point. I'm totally with her. So they said, all right, she'll just be Mira Furlan with a bald head, basically, you know. So
yeah, to me, this one was obviously sort of a Mira episode. And the big takeaway from that was, once again, there's more to her than you thought. That's where they sort of said,
yeah,
hey, she's way more higher ranking in her peoples than should be on this mission.
Yep.
You know, that should then. And I thought, oh, that's interesting.
Yep.
Then you had the Soul Takers. I laugh because I watched that movie Soul Taker with Joe Estevez. It's a B movie.
All right.
And I just watched Soul Taker, which is a silly B movie I watched on Mystery Science Theater, and now I'm watching the same soul harvesting concept. So it was really hard for me to not laugh during this episode.
But
I'm
really
have to send you Soul Taker, and when you're really bored with 90 minutes to spare one day, you're gonna have to watch it and enjoy yourself.
All right.
But yeah, so it was a neat concept, very similar to Soul Taker, unfortunately, of the guy who came, and his race was all about depending on which lens you look at through, was all about either stealing souls mm-hmm. or caring for souls.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, yeah, it was one of those, and I'm going to do it again, comparison to Star Trek. This is going to happen a lot. Every few Star Treks, you get sort of what I call a deep thinking episode. And it was more of a deep thinking episode, in my opinion. You know, mm-hmm. does this, you know, up to the viewer, you know? Do these people steal souls? Do they right. really help? And you even got that division, because it was like him, and I don't know if it was his literal brother, if he just calls him brother, but the mm-hmm. other guy from his race also showed up.
Yeah.
And because the one had kind of gone rogue. He was stealing souls before their time.
Exactly.
So that technically was stealing.
He was so incompetent that he'd always show up late and they'd be dead. So he's like, screw it, I'm going to show up before they die and just kill them myself so I don't miss out. It's like the most incompetent soul hunter of all time, but he found a workaround. right?
He found the loophole.
Now there's an interesting bit that I don't know if you caught, and I want to make sure you get this, where... Okay. Where, you know, some people, everybody, all the various alien races that knew about him were very uncomfortable with him there, and people were leaving the station because
yes,
he was there.
Yes,
but the Minbari, though, the Minbari are like, hell no, right? Delenn is
right,
like,
yes.
no, because it comes out, their great leader, the Minbari great leader, was named Dukat, okay? More about him later. And
which is funny, because Deep Space Nine has a Dukat as well.
Well, that's unfortunate. Again, they're ripping us off. But anyway, so when Dukat was dying, the soul hunters showed up in force because that was like the one soul they really wanted, right? That's like the
right.
Julius Caesar, you know, or Napoleon or something soul, and they really wanted it. And the Minbari piled up the dead bodies, basically, to prevent the soul hunter from getting to Dukat before he was dead. Now, that's because the Minbari, and it comes out in this episode, the Minbari believe that souls have to be freed in right. order for basically reincarnation. They want the souls to continue and not be trapped, okay? So they have a kind of a reincarnation thing going, and they don't want the soul. And basically, if you trap their soul, you've kept them from going to the next place they're supposed to be, see? So it's just absolutely abhorrent to the Minbari to interfere with a soul traveling, okay? So that's the thing there. That's why they hate him.
She was taking what looked like great pleasure in releasing the souls at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, yeah. And it was filmed in such a way, too, that I was watching it and I was going, okay, is she really taking great pleasure? Is it... I don't quite understand what's going on here, but I think it was the beauty of it is you're not supposed to understand.
Right. That's right.
You're supposed to be like, this is just the way they see it. This is the way they see it. You know, and it's very analogous to, you know, how religion is interpreted here in, you know, Earth, modern day. Some people see it this way and some people see it that way.
And there's several episodes that go down that same sort of path where you don't get an answer at the end. You kind of have to, you're left thinking about it. We'll see a few more before season one is over.
Yeah. Usually that bothers me. But in this case, since it's such a very, you know, the concept of souls and moving on and mm-hmm. whatever is up for debate from person to person, it doesn't bother me. But it bothers the heck out of me when people do like a big storyline that's sort of like this big highfalutin mystery, and then they go at the end, well, it's up to the viewer to solve it. And I'm like, what the hell did I pay you for? You write a good story to tell me. Way off topic, but I immediately think of the movie Donnie Darko. People who love that movie, mm-hmm. we're going to have a hard time being friends. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever saw it, man.
Yeah.
Are we going to be friends, me and you?
Did you like it or not like it?
I'm not big on it.
You what?
I'm not big on it.
It's been years. I barely remember it.
Yeah, it's one of those movies where they do like a lot of, oh, you know, mind twistiness, and then at the end they give you nothing. They're just like, well, it's up to the audience to figure it out. I'm like, anybody can write a confusing story that has no termination.
Right. I get
anyway,
you.
But the point is, they did that, but they did it in such a way and with such a subject matter that it didn't bother me. So kudos to them.
Mm-hmm.
Not a big problem. Plus, we got to see Sinclair running around the hallway shooting his laser gun. This is the only aesthetic of the show that I'm not impressed with right now, by the way.
Is
there laser pistols or like
All right,
I can watch two episodes of Star Trek, you know, original Kirk and Spock 60s, and sit down and sketch you out what a phaser looks like on Star Trek. I can't do that yet. It's almost like they're hiding it. I'm not getting a good look at it.
All right, let me tell you. They were still figuring it out. They get much better and they get consistent. What they end up using, and it's got to be very soon. I mean, the pilot, they had some kind of rifles or things were terrible, and then they do, I don't know what, but very soon on, they're going to settle on what's called a PPG, and it's actually really cool. It's a phase plasma gun, and what it does is you can't shoot a thing that'll puncture the hull inside the station, obviously, right? So
they
carry the PPGs, which have little caps that pop in, and they shoot a ball of superheated plasma. So when they shoot them, you get this distortion effect on the screen where the screen ripples as this ball of superheated gas punches a hole in flesh but doesn't mess up the hull. So they're going to address that in a very cool way coming up.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's good.
So you'll see a lot of PPGs coming up. Couple of things. The Soul Hunter throws out a few more clever hints, like he tells, remember the Minbari assassin in The Gathering told Sinclair, "There is a hole in your mind," and Sinclair doesn't know what he means, and now the Soul Hunter looks at Sinclair and says, they're using you, right? And when Delenn kind of wakes up and she's groggy, she says, "I knew you would come, we were right about you." Okay,
right.
Interesting. And then when the Soul Hunter looks at Delenn, he says, and is kind of reading her mind, he says, "You would plan such a thing? You would do such a thing? Incredible." So we're getting all these little clues.
See, this is what bugs me, is you're so far down the road that you're like, oh, look, little clue. And to me, it bugs me as a first-time watcher because they've inserted clues into this basically raving lunatic character. So to me, it's just the ravings of a madman. Like, I'm not even really focused in on what he's saying.
You don't have to be. These are just things that
when you watch it the second time, that's a really good thing because it adds that secondary value. So you can go back and watch the series a whole other time and go, oh yeah, and this and that. Mm-hmm. But as a guy watching for the first time, now knowing there's clues involved, it's frustrating because you're like, well, don't give those lines to the raving lunatic character who I'm not paying attention to.
that's a valid point.
But like I said, I didn't really notice the soul hunter or soul taker. I can't remember because I watched it back to back.
Hunter.
Right. Like, it's one thing to give him those lines, but like the one that stuck with me was the lady when she said, you know, something like, you are what you're supposed to be. Or you said it better than I did. That one I was like, okay, another level going on there when she gave her line. The ravings of a madman, that was just rolling off my back, you know.
I thought that Morgan Shepherd did a really good job, though. He was just weird enough and quirky enough that it was very creepy and it was very effective, I thought, his performance.
I thought so too, and they did a good delineation between him and his brother character.
Yeah,
because I mean, when this is the first time you meet a member of this race, you just assume they're all like this. Mm-hmm. And by bringing the brother, he was much more mellow.
Yeah,
and you know, Sinclair was all like being tough guy, like, yeah, I need you to be off my ship in the next 20 minutes or whatever. And he was all like chill. He's like, cool, yeah, I can do that.
I know, I like that. I like it that they're not all like, belligerent.
And I thought that was neat because it was like it almost showed that was a position of power. It was one of those things like Sinclair's giving the orders, but he came off as like, yeah, whatever, you're under my radar, dude. Yeah, fine. I can leave the station. It doesn't matter. It doesn't affect the outcome of things.
Well,
so I thought that was neatly played.
The last thing I had a note to mention to you is in the first couple of episodes, we get the news that there's a presidential election going on between...
Which led to a pretty funny line.
Which one was that? I can't remember.
Which she said he has no chin and his vice president has several. This
yes.
is not a good combination.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
that's the only line she's uttered thus far that I've enjoyed. You gave me a heads up on that. You said that character isn't developed for a little bit, so I'm cutting it some slack. But right now, it's just like boring and gray.
Ivanova gets much better. But yeah, I think the problem, and I think most people that have, they're familiar with all this will agree. The problem is that originally JMS wanted her to be very Russian, and he would write the dialogue as if somebody with like a Russian accent would be saying it, so she wouldn't use contractions, you know, and she'd say things very stiffly. But very quickly, JMS figured out that Claudia Christian is Claudia Christian, and I have to write for Claudia Christian. And so when he starts writing for Claudia Christian, instead of writing for his Russian lieutenant commander, she gets much, much more agreeable in terms of, you know, the audience and everything.
One of the two episodes, she actually uttered the line, "Well, I'm Russian, so therefore blah, blah, blah." And then I went, yeah. Oh, okay. I didn't get that at all from before.
other than Susan Ivanova, right? That's the only clue is her name until she actually.
I'm still learning names, so I guess I didn't tune in on that tightly enough. But yeah, you were. I derailed you a little bit. You were making a point about her.
No, about the election. About the election, because she said that about the candidate.
Yes, the election. Yes.
Yeah, you had President Luis Santiago and his Vice President Clark up against Marie Crane, the challenger. And I believe they say that Santiago wins and defeats Marie Crane. Things like that are going to be happening in the background all along, and they impact things. I mean, who wins the presidential election when you're talking about a space station that is so political and is so connected with the opinions back on Earth is very important because... You know, Earth on the one hand is very involved in being among the alien races. You know, there's another backstory there about how Earth came to the rescue of some of the non-aligned worlds when they were dealing with an. You'll see this later, but Earth has kind of like helped some of the non-aligned races, the ones that you don't know their names really ever. You know, hardly. And so Earth on the one hand is just first. It's like the United States after the Spanish-American War. First kind of going out in the world and getting involved, but still not seen as one of the greatest powers. On the other hand, there's a lot back on Earth that are like America first, you know, stay here, don't get involved with those dirty foreign aliens, Earth first, you know. And so JMS does a lot with the idea of isolationism versus being involved globally or galactically, you know. And Earth is kind of the metaphor for that, where, you know, do we want to be involved with others that are different from us, or do we want to pull back and be xenophobic? That's a big thread that runs through this series. And the presidential election is just one aspect of it that continues even, you know, today, obviously, in our real world to be relevant. The idea that who wins a presidential election has a lot of impact on attitudes, on politics, and on things like a military-run space station. So
I haven't seen anything like that recently. So,
and it's true though. It's one interesting thing is that Sinclair is a military figure, and the Earth military runs Babylon 5. So even though it's a diplomatic station, it's very interesting that Earth Force is sort of in charge of it. It's like a military base / international gathering place, and that's another kind of weird thing about it that'll play out.
Yeah, you're right. You'd think it'd be more ambassadors than, you know, colonels and generals and whatnot. But, you know, I cut it that slack because, again, the only thing I have to bounce it off of is Star Trek, and they basically turned the military into its exploration and ambassadorial function.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, okay, so far so good. You seem to have liked the first two regular episodes, and so are you... You fired up to come back down the road a little bit and do three through six?
I am fired up for 3 through 6. I will be getting those worked into my rotation as best as I can.
Okay.
So yeah, I think it's a good show. It's good enough to keep going on. That's for sure. And I do think that it will. I can see the seeds of it in improving as we go.
A little word of warning about 3, 4, 5, and 6. Two of them are considered two of the best, not at the top, but two of the best first season episodes, and two of them are considered closer toward the bottom. I won't tell you which ones.
I'll try to figure it out on my own.
Won't tell you which ones. And also, you're going to meet McGrath, and I won't tell you who that is, but Nagrath is one of my favorite characters. Everybody else hates Nagrath.
Okay, I'll keep an eye out and give you my honest assessment.
I love Nagrath. Everybody else hates him.
And so from here, we'll just find ourselves leaping from podcast to podcast.
That's right.
Right, what once went wrong.
And there.
Leap will be our leap to the home podcast.
There you go. Yeah. and that brings us to the end for this episode. But yeah, we will leap to Quantum Leap next time. So when the next time that Jared and I get together, we will be talking about the first the pilot two-part, well, the pilot extended episode, and then I guess the first real episode, right? And one more.
Yeah. And it's confusing because the pilot and syndication got split into two, so it's considered episodes 1 and 2.
Okay.
Anyway, we're going to watch the first few Quantum Leaps. That's all they need to know.
Yeah, and that'll be fun. We'll do that very soon. So, okay. Well, I guess the rocket's going to get on out of here for another week. I hope you Babylon 5 fans enjoyed this and lived up to your expectations. And I hope that folks that haven't seen the show, you might want to start watching it now, and you can kind of experience it along with Jared and me, and we'll talk about it. So,
do me one favor. I know you're trying to sign off, but do me one favor out there, fans. We are dead serious. This is my very first time going through this. So we want you to comment on the Twitters and the Facebooks, the website, any comments. We want your involvement. But please be careful of spoilers for my point. I want to enjoy it as purely as I can so I can give you the most pure and honest feedback that I can.
This show is too good to mess up. You can't. Please don't mess it up for Jared. I'm teasing him, but there's a difference between teasing him with little tidbits versus actually telling him things that are going to happen. So we'll try very hard not to let you get spoiled on anything, Jared. So
I want your feedback. I want tweets and comments that say, "Oh, I can't wait for you to get to episode 4. But I don't want tweets and comments that like, "You're not going to believe it when so-and-so dies." And I'm just like, what?
Right, exactly.
So help me out there, audience. I appreciate it.
So you can reach, me at Van Allen Plexico on Twitter and Van Allen Plexico on Facebook. Jared, what's your Twitter handle of note?
I am at Yard Sale Artist Twitter, and I'm also the Yard Sale Artist on Facebook. So hit us up. Love to chat with you guys about it. Just be careful of your spoilers for poor Jared, who's taking his first voyage into the space world of Babylon 5.
All right. And thanks so much, Jared. The rocket's going to get out of here for another episode. We will see you folks down the road.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.